Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat, live from Supercomputing in wonderful Seattle, Washington. I'm Allison Klein, and I'm here with John Riley, Executive Director of Design and Engineering Programs for the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences. Welcome.
Great to be here.
John, Supercomputing is always a great conference for the tech industry because it shows off what the high-performance computing industry has been doing to deliver new levels of innovation around innovation of insight and ability to plunge through to the next frontier. But today we're going to talk about something a little bit different, which is supercomputing and manufacturing. Can you tell us a little bit about your organization and why it's so important in terms of pushing American industry forward?
Yeah, sure. NCMS, National Center for Manufacturing Sciences, started about 25 years ago. Department of Commerce at that time would rank their top 10 needs for U.S. competitiveness. And in the top two were, well, one of them was manufacturing in general, so machine tools. So NCMS was formed to basically help that industry become more competitive. Now, what we mean by more competitive is basically delivering technologies that would help manufacturers of all size, you know, from four employees up to, you know, 400,000 employees, be more competitive globally. Mm-hmm. So we do that by collaboratively having companies partner together to find innovations, develop innovations, commercialize solutions into the marketplace for U.S. manufacturers.
When you look at, actually, let me back up for a second. We are live, so if you would like to send questions, please send them to our Blog Talk Radio site or on Twitter at Intel Chip Chat, and we'd love to hear your questions for John. When you look at the broader global economy. I just got back from France, and you know the discussion of the euro was everywhere. Obviously, manufacturing forms the foundation of a healthy economy. When you look at the manufacturing segment of the U.S. economy and the road to recovery from the economic troubles that we faced, where are the opportunities here, and you know, what does your organization focus on in terms of helping the manufacturing sector drive more jobs and more productivity for U.S. companies?
Okay, well, there's two pieces to this answer. One is for any economy, manufacturing is probably the key sector. I don't think anybody really doubts that or questions that. When you create a manufacturing job, you create typically 1.5 other jobs, manufacturing, restaurant, hotel, suppliers, et cetera. And so there's no other sector that can say that. And so everybody, I think, in the federal government, in the United States understands that. I think people in Europe understand that. You see China understanding that. Korea understands that. And so how do we create manufacturing jobs that then create more jobs?
Right.
And in the U.S., I don't think most of the R&D that is spent by manufacturers, so where is the innovation being developed? How do they develop new technologies? For the last 20 years, has been slipping from the large companies like the GE and the Bell Labs and those kind of things down to the supply chain. So we're talking companies with less than 500 employees. The average manufacturer, including the GEs and Boeings in the U.S., have 40 employees.
Wow.
So there are a vast number of manufacturers in the country with 10, 12, 4 employees. Actually, probably about 80% of U.S. manufacturers have less than 20 employees.
That's incredible.
Yeah, people don't realize that. So how do you work with these companies to develop and commercialize innovations that basically spur on manufacturing as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to get those companies tools and technologies in order to do that. And frankly, they don't have the structure or the capital to invest in it because of the burden of the last 3 years in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to figure how do we get those technologies, and HPC is absolutely one of them, into their hands. And so that would be a key strategy at NCMS to enable small and medium-sized manufacturers to have technologies to commercialize innovations. They can grow their business, grow their bottom line, start hiring people. And by doing that, you start to see it, you know, basically hit a tipping point in our country.
So from the broader context, you know, we've talked about the rise of China, you mentioned them, and the fact that there's been kind of a equalization emerging, that the U.S. is becoming, again, more competitive for an opportunity for manufacturing where maybe they were too expensive of an option before, maybe a leveling of world markets. When you look at these small companies and what they have, you know, that takes us to the opportunity to find ways to drive efficiency to make them even more competitive. I was doing some research earlier about the interview today, and it said that, you know, of the 300,000 small and medium businesses out there that are actually participating in the manufacturing sector in the U.S., only about a third of them are using computerized tools for manufacturing processes. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that and how computing is looked at as a strategic tool for manufacturing growth?
Okay. Yeah, I think your numbers are optimistic. I think the, you know, I mean, it's when we say computerized tools, I think you're including CAD.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
And CAD is great, and it helps design things, but it doesn't help optimize them. It doesn't help go faster.
Mm-hmm.
HPC does. And so, I mean, if you look at the 300,000 manufacturers in the U.S., only 4% have HPC. And by HPC, we're probably talking 10 nodes, 25 nodes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, small systems. You know, we're not talking Jaguar at Oak Ridge. I mean, we're talking small mm-hmm. systems. And so only 4% are incorporating this at all. There are 12% that are doing some modeling and simulation on a desktop, but it's a desktop.
Right.
And then there's 84% of U.S. manufacturers maybe have CAD or they have nothing.
Right, okay.
And so you can imagine, I mean, it's a blue ocean opportunity out there. It's a market that is completely untapped. And so how do we help those companies, you know, get those tools to not only design the parts, but then optimize the parts, look at new materials? How do I create the next generation nylon or a nylon replacement, or actually make composite materials affordable and implementable across a wide variety of product lines instead of just, you know, Boeing's new, you know, airliner?
Well, and that's, I mean, I think that's an interesting thing that you bring up, Boeing. You know, we always think about the Dreamliner mm-hmm. and, you know, the fact that it was designed heavily utilizing high-performance computing. You know, we talk about a term at Intel, which is one of my favorite words, called dematerialization, which basically means, you know, the cost savings of not having to build multiple prototypes and being able to root cause design challenges in electronic space rather than physical space. But I guess the challenge that I want to talk to you about is, how do you bridge that divide from a company like Boeing, who has no choice but to look at that space given the size and scale of what they're doing, to a small manufacturer who might not be as comfortable or adept at applying technologies? What is the process by which your organization tries to transfer that technology to them?
Okay, there's we see it as a four-rung ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if I go back and look at the 84%, the 12%, the 4%, 4%ers are kind of users. They know the language. They probably have a couple of PhDs or a master's student that actually can run HPC models. They know how to submit jobs. They know what a cluster means. They've heard of InfiniBand, that kind of stuff. So you have those 4%. The problem is they don't have access to enough resources.
Mm-hmm.
This would be the same boat that GE and Boeing are in. You know,
mm-hmm.
they want to get into the national labs, but they don't have codes at scale. So, you know, these little companies want to use more computing, but they don't think they can afford it. So you got to give a cloud version, a pay-as-you-go. It's not just software as a service. It's everything as a service.
Mm-hmm.
And so you give them access to be able to burst out and do more. And so the 4% would be the low-hanging fruit. The 12%, they're doing something on a desktop. They just need to figure out, how do I get access to more, how, you know, and then what's the ROI? And so, again, you can't ask these little companies to sit there and pay for a bunch of software licenses, get under that money. So you're going to have some capital investment issues to deal with. And so you want to create for them a playground, I call it a sandbox,
mm-hmm.
where you can entice them in. Let's try some things. We'll subsidize it. So at NCMS, we do private-public partnerships. We do collaborations. We work with federal funding, state funding. We work with foundations. And we work with industry. And we start partnering funds to try to get some of these companies a chance to go out and play, zero risk, and they can experience and determine an ROI for them on how it would work. Now, the never-evers, is a hard nut. That is going to require a massive marketing awareness strategy campaign, and it's going to take everybody pulling in the same direction. And so at NCMS, we have alliances and partners with a variety of organizations, whether it's university outreach programs or outreach programs to Department of Energy Labs, or Department of Commerce has something called Manufacturing Extension Programs, MEP for short. We have probably 60 MEP centers in our country. All they do is work with these people. And we want to give MEP the toolboxes to go in and help these companies be aware, do some training, create some basically understanding that this tool even exists, and then kind of migrate them up to the desktop and then migrate them up to the system level. And so it's a ladder. And while we're taking the low-hanging fruit and trying to get them onto larger systems through the cloud, we want to migrate the never-evers up onto the ladder to where they're at least trying some things at a desktop right. in an enticed manner where it's low cost, low risk.
Are there any particular industry trends, particular verticals that would be the lead adopters versus the, I like the way you terms, the never evers?
The low hanging fruit are going to be, I think, companies tied to probably aerospace and automotive. Those mm-hmm. have historically been the drivers for HPC and manufacturing.
Right.
You know, Ford and GM and Toyota, right. they've been using these systems for years
forever.
To do crash
yeah.
simulations, to do fluids on their aerodynamics and how to do, meet their EPA requirements. And of course, aerospace has been doing this for probably, close to 30 years, at least 25, on anything from satellite development to the new Dreamliner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. You look at a Boeing or a GE who uses stuff in for aerospace. Their suppliers, you just go one level down, and it almost immediately just vaporizes. And so you have companies that are using this to develop a plane, yet their suppliers developing components are not. There's a disconnect there.
Mm-hmm.
And so those would be the two segments that would come to my mind immediately in manufacturing. And then obviously it will broaden out as other portions of the manufacturing sector start picking it up.
That makes a lot of sense. When you talk about deploying across the vast majority of the never-evers, do you have a concept of looking at the number of companies that would fit into that category of how large that market is and what the size and scope of the opportunity is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's about, those manufacturers represent about 12 million jobs today.
Wow.
So you have 12 million people. Maybe 10, but 12 might be the whole 300,000. Maybe let's say 10, nice round number. 10 million people working at Never Evers in our country. That's just the U.S.
Right.
And so you have 300,000 manufacturers in the U.S. that represent those 10 million people. There are 2 million small, medium-sized manufacturers worldwide,
mm-hmm.
so of which 300,000 here in the U.S. So when you start talking about the potential there, you have, let's just say you hit, let's just 10%.
Mm-hmm.
That's 30,000 new potential customers. And if each of those customers ended up being able to get to, let's say, 10 cores,
mm-hmm.
That's it. That's 300,000 cores.
Right.
So now you compare that to some of the largest systems. How many large systems would it take to match that?
Right.
Several.
Right.
And that's just 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's an enormous market out there in the provider space. And so companies like Intel, software providers, they recognize this.
Right,
sure. And we're working with them to say, okay, here's a potential market for you on the manufacturing side. It's competitiveness to the federal government. It's job creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't care if you're blue or red, what aisle you sit on, in Washington, D.C., everybody recognizes the potential for this technology in U.S. manufacturing. All we got to do now is get our gang of 12 to make a decision and get some budget money set aside, and we can go.
Well, I think that, one of the things that we were talking about on Livecast at the Intel Developer Forum a couple months ago was that there is a massive change going on in the HPC arena where you've got, the nexus of this concept of my cluster is bigger than your cluster as the foundation of HPC. But then you've got this new wave of reach and all of the different companies that could benefit from HPC that have not used it before. And I guess my last question for you, when you look at that group and we talk about the vast majority of companies out there that could benefit in the manufacturing sector that aren't using them today, is it a technology awareness issue? Is it app availability because HPC has been so focused on grow your own code? Is it just a sociological mind shift to utilizing computerized processes for both design and optimization and efficiency in delivery? What do you think are the top issues, and what do you think is going to be critical to solving them? Once we answer that question, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about the technology solutions themselves.
There's two primary hurdles, and you said them both. The top hurdle, I think, long term, is culture change and awareness. So we need to help companies become aware of the tools. It'd be never evers. And if we're going to scale this and grow this to have a self-sustaining model, is to have a large number of these companies be willing to change how they do business today and be able to incorporate some technology tools in order to do that. So it's culture change, it's awareness, and that's going to be an enormous long term. It's going to take a while. We're talking years to do that. So that's one hurdle. The other hurdle is that the tools exist for these companies. We don't have to go out and design an exascale system or figure out how to address latency in a network. I mean all the tools exist. What we don't have is a business model to deliver them. And so how do I create not just accessible tools, but affordable tools in a different business model from how most of the companies, I'm talking specifically software, have delivered tools to a Boeing or a Ford? And so instead of having a system where you buy 500 licenses at $50,000 a pop, now you basically submit jobs and you pay by the core hour. And we have to come up with a business model that works not only for the value equation of the small manufacturers, but it also works for the software vendors and the other providers that are out there delivering those tools. So those are the two hurdles.
Fantastic. Well, I think that we're about to go to a break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. A reminder to the audience, if you do have questions, submit them at Blog Talk Radio or on Twitter at Intel Chip Chat. And we'll be back for the second half of this very interesting interview.
We'll be right back with more of Allison's interview. Have a question? Visit us at twitter.com/IntelChipChat. We'll be answering questions live next.
And we're back live from beautiful Seattle, Washington with John Riley. We're at Supercomputing 2011, one of my favorite conferences of the year. And John, we did get a question from the audience over the break, and I'll get to it in a second, but I read something about predictive innovation centers. Can you tell me a little bit about what predictive innovation centers are and how they're utilized? What's the goal?
Okay. Predictive innovation center is basically the means to an end. So we've been talking about this strategy and the potential value for reaching what we call the missing middle, these 300,000 U.S. manufacturers. The way NCMS has proposed to do this is through a series of predictive innovation centers, probably 10 to 12 scattered across the country. They would be private-public partnerships working with state agencies, state infrastructure, as in universities or other key features that state may have, working with industry in that region, working with provider partners such as Intel or others, to create a collaborative space where we can begin to develop the tools to reach a segment of the missing middle. So, for instance, we would have universities, industry partners, provider partners working on transportation safety, potentially in the state of Virginia. And what we would be doing there would be developing the means for companies interested in transportation safety to have access to tools virtually. So it'd be through a portal, through a web-based tool. Our goal is to develop apps, to where companies can have simple, they don't have to have a PhD on hand. They can just, click an icon on their screen and be able to actually be using HPC without even knowing it on simple tasks. And then also have engagements where they can come in and get access to expertise, not through NCMS, but through our partners. So it'd be a collaborative private-public partnership scattered across the country.
So industry, government, your organization.
Industry, yep.
and government really providing the funnel for the small businesses to get involved.
Yeah, government would supply the seed funding.
Right,
and so in the proposals, you know, when you talk to government, they want job creation, they want sustainability. They don't want to be on the hook 5 years from now still paying you, you know, $2 million mm-hmm. a year to make this thing run. They want to know, how does this get off the ground and get up on its own feet? And so that's part of our business strategy with the PICS, is that we create revenue models not only for the center but also the providers. And that will eventually be paid as these industries start moving up that ladder I talked about. They mm-hmm. go from awareness to enticement to actually where now they're engaging modeling and simulation through apps or job submissions. And mm-hmm. each of these different things, we actually created 41 revenue streams for a PICS. And each of those revenue streams would be shared with our providers and partners to create a self-sustaining model.
So let's get to the audience question. When you look at the interview thus far, it's not a surprise that this came up, given that our audience is very focused on cloud. But do you see HP services in the cloud? I think you've already said that you do. But how do you see cloud service delivery for HPC? And does this mean a direct tie to standard models for vertical industry implementations of HPC solutions?
Well, I mean, in short, we absolutely want to leverage the cloud. Now, mm-hmm. cloud means different things to different people.
Right.
And so
what does it
when
mean
I
to you?
When I say cloud, I'm talking about remote access, mm-hmm. You know, to a wide variety of tech of tools. So, you know, I don't see the PIC centers having huge computer systems. We may have a small system mm-hmm. there for companies that come in and want to play, but I see ourselves networked with existing centers through universities or through state centers or through the DOE or mm-hmm. whatever. And so you have this cloud of capability that's in our country that we would network and make virtually available through web portals. So that companies could come in and use those. Now, in order for that to happen, we want to create a whole suite of tools. I want to create the app store for U.S. manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have iTunes.
Right.
You know, I want to create the equivalent for U.S. manufacturing, and we've been in discussions on how to do that. And
that's really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a grand vision, but I think there are a number of parties that are very interested. There's a number of parties here at SC11 that are whole bought into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a matter, it's too big of a risk for one of these companies, even an Intel, to bite off. And so you sit there and you try to partner them so they all take their bite and the risk becomes reduced.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to do.
So positive ROI for each of the
exactly.
industry players
that's
playing,
right.
And everybody wins in the end.
Right.
You know, one question that I have for you in terms of the impact that this could make, you know, interesting statistics of, you know, how many manufacturing job openings are not being filled today because of the lack
of
capabilities.
Yeah.
Does this innovation center that you speak of, is there a need for some tech education components there, or is that something that beyond?
I didn't use the word education, but when we talk about awareness, that bottom tier, there is education. We want to educate current workforce and future workforce.
Right.
And so, you know, the current workforce is part of that change and that migration.
Mm-hmm.
Future workforce is to fill a gap. Because you're right. I mean, I don't know how many papers today have the statistics of how many kids are graduating from college and they can't find a job.
Right.
And they are not being educated and trained in the fields that are hiring. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there are companies. I mean, GE just invested, I think, $80 million in Michigan in an R&D center and a new factory. And I was talking to the guy that runs the facility, and he has struggled to find employees.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, and here you are in Michigan with one of the highest unemployment rates in the country, having all these laid off auto workers that are
right.
very talented, yet even they don't meet the skill set he needs, because a lot of what he's doing is advanced manufacturing and it's modeling and simulation.
Right.
And so we've got to get working with our education organizations, whether it's universities or community colleges or others, to help bring these, you know, new hires up to snuff. And I think the PICS will address some of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to work with students. We want to have students actually at the center working. So all of our PICS have been looked to be located near or on university campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to partner with them. But then we also want to be able to educate, you know, virtually current workforce.
Right. Well, that makes sense, given that there's been such a strong support historically for HPC and university campuses, that
yeah.
there might be a way to segue into this space as well. You know, I wouldn't be going back home to Mother Intel without asking you what technology innovation has meant to being able to deliver this opportunity. When you look at the solutions themselves and the way we can build high-performance computing solutions today, what are the key attributes or the key changes in technology that has been able to allow for this to be an opportunity for small and medium business?
Well, I think the first thing has been the, I'm not sure if it's the right word or not, but it's what small and mediums need from HPC is almost a commodity today. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying HPC is a commodity, because if you start talking to Argonne and some of the high-end companies, what they're trying to do, there's a ways to go. There's a push to exascale. That's important. It needs mm-hmm. to happen.
Sure.
But from the small and medium-sized guys, we've been able to take hardware in particular and drive it to a point to where it has become commoditized. It has become a non-issue from the cost standpoint mm-hmm. for them to enter. We still haven't got quite through there yet with the software side.
Right.
And ISVs are very interested in this, and they mm-hmm. have partnered with us. They want to do it. They're trying to make sure that they don't make a business mistake in how they do it. And so, we got great tools that have been developed over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We just need a business model that matches those tools with the new market.
I mean, exactly where you started.
I think it's that simple. That's right. Yeah, exactly right.
So what is your focus this week at Supercomputing? Where will you be talking? And what are the goals in terms of engaging with the Supercomputing crowd for those who are in Seattle and might want to get to know you a little bit better?
Well, this is a busy week. It's interesting. This is my second Supercomputing, so mm-hmm. I'm new to this event, and it's a mammoth event, and it is hard to pick up critical mass here if you're new, because there's so much going on.
It is kind of clubby.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so we've had, NCMS has been very, very fortunate to have two or three, I think, key partners that have helped elevate an awareness of who we are. It starts with Intel.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stephen Wheat has been an enormous ally. We have worked with him for the last year or so,
mm-hmm.
and he has helped with his Alliance for High Performance Digital Manufacturing. I think we have had some really good inroads with Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
And then Tabor Communications, HPC Wire, HPC in the Cloud. Tom Tabor has become a good ally and a friend, and we've actually created DM Report with them. And so that has kind of helped elevate who we are here. And through that, I think there's been a number of engagements. And so this week, as far as activities, we're going to be speaking at the Intel booth, or I will mm-hmm. be three times.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I'll be over there for half an hour at 3:00, talking about this whole idea. What is a PIC? How does it work? Who is NCMS? Tomorrow I'll be talking again over there at 1:30, and then at Thursday I'll be in the Intel booth at noon. Now, and so those are where we're kind of publicly speaking, but in the meantime, we've got, I don't know how many one-on-ones at different, organizations that wanted to sit down and understand better who we are. We've met with Supermicro and Dell already. We're, today it's Penguin and Mellanox, and
mm-hmm.
the list goes on. So these are, a lot of these are companies we've had some discussions with, but we're starting to break in, a better understanding of who we are and where we're going, so.
And if for those of the audience that aren't lucky enough to be in Seattle this week, it's funny, Supercomputing is always in a good place, because last year you must have been in New Orleans with us if you were there.
Yep.
Where can they reach you online, and where can they learn more about the organization?
Okay, thanks for the opportunity. You can find out pretty much everything we're doing at our website, which is www.ncms.org. Underneath, on one of the top lines, you'll see digital manufacturing under one of our programs. Everything we're doing is there. Contact information is up there. But if you wanted to email me, it's just jonjohnr@ncms.org. And I'd be happy to entertain questions, comments, interest. We do have, I guess as a last point, a means for industry or interested parties to engage in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is called Strategic Interest Group that we have at NCMS. It is growing. We have about 20 organizations. So we have about 400 members, 20 of which have a distinct interest in this topic. It includes universities, industry providers. We have a number of federal agencies that have participated, DOE, NASA, et cetera. And so if there's interest in being a part of, actually making this happen, that's the Strategic Interest Group. And I'd be thrilled to talk with anybody who had any interest or questions about that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today. It was a wonderful entry into the challenges and opportunities in the manufacturing sector with HPC. We'd love to have you back on the program again sometime to hear about the progress that you're making in delivering this exciting capacity to manufacturers across the country.
We'd be excited to do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much.